Hi, this is Gene Montrastelli, the editor of TappingQ&A.com, and tonight for our teaching class, I was actually inspired while I was sitting on the train. On Saturday, I took the train back from Savannah, Georgia, up to Baltimore, Maryland, and it's about a 12-hour train ride, and it was really nice, sitting by the window, getting some work done, staring out the window, catching up on podcasts. And one of the things that I was poking through is Tim Ferriss's new book, The 4-Hour Chef. And it's the third of his books. The first was The 4-Hour Workweek. The second was The 4-Hour Body. The 4-Hour Chef, even though it teaches you how to cook, it's really not a book about cooking. The book itself is about how we learn. And what he does is he uses the process of learning how to cook as a way of teaching the best way to learn. And he sets up some premises at the beginning that were really helpful, that when you're going to learn something new, what you do is you go to the outliers. You go to the folks that are doing really radical things, and you look at the two or three things that they are concentrating on that's making all of the difference. And in looking at that, what you do is you recognize the pieces that are most effective or get used most. And so I've been reading the book for a while. I was continuing reading on the train ride up. And one of the things that I thought about as I was reading it was, what are the things that I use most? What are the tools that I spend most of my time using when I'm working on my own or when I'm working with clients? And I recognize the fact that I spend a huge chunk of my client time when I'm working one-on-one with folks on five really simple tools or techniques. And so what I did on the bus ride up is I actually started documenting them and writing them down. And eventually it's going to turn into a book that you all will get an opportunity to get for free and get first access to as I'm editing through the process before it's released to the public. But I recognize that if you master these five things, after you understand the basics of tapping, regardless what issue comes up, you're going to put yourself in a circumstance where you're going to have a great way to approach it and a great way to step in. Like I said, I use these things a lot when I'm working with clients. That there are lots of other tools and techniques that are useful, but these five are a really great starting point. So what I'm going to do tonight is I'm just going to walk through those four of those five, because one of them we've already talked about in the class a few weeks ago. And before we're done, I'll point your way to that. So the first thing that I really use as a bedrock to understand, and I spend a lot of time dealing with my clients, is responding to resistance. And we've been talking a lot over the course of the last 6 weeks or so on the site around this idea of self-sabotage and how we get past it. And one of the things that really get in our way, and we talked about this a lot in the goal class, was resistance to change. And a mantra that I keep reminding myself of over and over again is, if there wasn't resistance to change, the change already would have happened. I'll say that again. If there wasn't resistance to change, the change would have already have happened. Because our system is naturally designed to be at health and well-being. And so if we are away from health and well-being, then there's something in there that's preventing us to do that. And it's that resistance. And so oftentimes, the first place to start is looking at, where are we resisting the change? And I have five things that I like to look at when I'm dealing with resistance to change. And these are questions that I ask when I sit down to do some transformational work. So you're sitting down and you want to do work on a particular issue. And it might be, I want to lose some weight. It might be, I want to take new action. It might be, I want to let go of this emotion. But it's not happening. For some reason, we're resisting the transformation process. We're resisting change. So these are the five questions that I kind of work my way through. The first one is, I'm in this moment in a state where I don't believe the tool set is going to work. You know, as much EFT as I do, and many amazing, amazing things that I've seen happen with EFT, there are moments where I still have doubts. because it's something that is mysterious. It is something that we don't fully understand. It is something that's outside of my normal spectrum of what should work and what shouldn't work, because I cannot see the mechanical process. And so it's possible that I doubt the protocol itself, because when I get really involved into an emotion, or I'm working with a client and they get into an emotion, it's like, oh, that EFT thing, that doesn't work for me. And so the first thing I like to address is, do I believe EFT or whatever tool I'm going to use is going to work? And if I bump into a place where I believe that I'm having trouble with that, I'm going to tap on that. Even though right now I don't believe EFT is going to work, I know from the past I've seen it do amazing things. And in this moment I have my doubts, but it doesn't cost anything and it doesn't take any time, and I'm going to give myself a try. And so I'm just going to take a few moments and I'm going to clear away any of that resistance. Now, the second layer of resistance that we bump into, and I refer to them as layers because I almost think of it sometimes as an everlasting gobstopper. If you've ever seen any of the articles on the site about resistance, I usually use this analogy. The old gobstoppers, they have a giant sweet tart in the middle, and there's candy coating going around each side, and each layer is a different color of candy coating. And so it's almost as if we're chipping through these layers of resistance before we can get to that candy in the center where the real issue is. So the first is, I question whether or not the tool's going to work at all. The second level of resistance is, it's not going to work for me, or it's not going to work for me right now. You know, I believe EFT works for lots of things, but this issue is too big, or I'm too far gone, or I don't know where to start, therefore it's not possible for me to work. And if I don't believe EFT is going to work for me in this circumstance, then obviously I'm never going to try to do the work. Then I'm just going to talk myself out of it. I'm going to do it in a half-hearted way. And so again, if I bump into this place where I'm wondering whether or not it's going to work for me in this circumstance, it's a very simple and similar tapping protocol. You know, I'm afraid EFT isn't going to work right now for me. It's worked in the past. It's worked for other things, but this is too big or too hairy, or I'm in the wrong frame of mind, or whatever it is. But I give myself permission to give it a try this time, to just see what happens, knowing it's only going to cost me a few minutes of time. And even if it takes a percentage of the anxiety, the pain, the emotion away, it's going to put me in a circumstance where I'm going to feel better. So again, just approaching it in a simple, small way. So layer one doesn't work. Layer two isn't going to work for me right now. The third type of resistance that pops up a lot is the resistance that this is going to be a really painful experience. We're afraid that we're going to uncover secrets about ourselves that we don't want to know. We're afraid we're going to unravel ourselves emotionally to the point where we don't know what's going on and we can't put ourselves back together. We're going to get so emotional that it's going to become so big that it's going to be completely unmanageable and wreck the rest of my day. And so if we're in that place where it's scary to do the work, either because it's going to be painful or it's going to be so big that I get lost in it, we're obviously not going to start. And so again, very simple, very straightforward. We're going to tap in the exact same way. You know, I know that there's a lot of work that needs to be done, and it's possible there are some things that I don't want to know and that some things that are going to be really big. But EFT is such that as I move into the process and as I move through the steps, I'm going to be able to gently creep up on the issue. And I don't have to do it all at once. And anytime I want to stop, I can. And I can bring myself back to my breathing, and I can bring myself back to calm. And oftentimes, my worry about it being gross is bigger than the issue itself. And I learned this really directly firsthand. I was working with a friend. She lived in my neighborhood. And she asked if I would come over and tap with her. Excuse me. And I went over, and for 45 minutes, we talked about everything in the world except for the reason why she'd asked me to come over. And I asked, you know, so what's going on? Do you want to tap on this or not? And it wasn't accusatory, and it wasn't confrontational. It was simply asking the question. And she mentioned the fact that it was really scary and gross, that she was dealing in a circumstance where a loved one had been sexually assaulted, and she just didn't want to pull up all the emotions. because the loved one was a long way away and there was nothing she could do. And I said, well, how big is the whole emotional constellation? Everything. The emotion about what's going on and the scariness that it's going to be too big and all of it. And she held her hands, you know, about the size of a beach ball. So we took a few moments and tapped on this idea of being afraid it's going to be too big and I'm going to get lost in my emotion and it's going to be painful. And we cleared that stuff. And I said, okay, great. How big is it now? And she held her hands about 6 inches apart. We took care of 75% of the emotional charge just dealing with the resistance of being afraid of going into it. So by looking at the emotion we have about what's going on and what we're worried about, tapping on that first before we dive in makes it a little easier. The fourth type of resistance that prevents us from doing work is we're afraid it's going to come back. You know, I'm going to do this work and it's going to get better and I'm going to get my hopes up and I'm going to feel really comfortable that it's gone. And then 15 minutes or 2 hours or 2 days or 2 weeks later, it's going to come creeping back in. And that might happen. You know, we might tap ourselves to relief for a short period of time. And so whenever I bump into that resistance that I'm worried that it's going to come back again, I remind myself how little it costs me to tap, just a little time and a little energy, and I'm not putting anything pharmacological in my body, and I'm not exerting a huge amount of energy and a huge amount of time. And if it means that I have to tap for 90 seconds every hour to deal with the pain in my mouth until I can get to a dentist, I'm willing to make that trade. Now, the system might feel like it's a waste because I'm not really getting it to go away, and that's why it's resisting. And so what I do, again, is I just tap through it. Part of me is worried that if I tap on this, I'm going to get better and it's going to come back and I'm going to feel like I failed and I'm going to feel like it's a waste of time. But I recognize the fact that it costs me very little time, very little energy to be able to tap and make this transformation. And even if the healing only lasts for the next 45 minutes, that's 45 minutes of relief that's worth the little time that I'm going to spend tapping right now. And if it comes back, what I'm going to do is I'm going to go back and I'm going to tap again. And if we do this, what we're going to do is we're going to put ourselves into a place where we're going to be open to spending a little time tapping because we're going to go, okay, you're right. It's okay if I do this. By doing this, I'm going to unpack this. I'm going to open it up. I'm going to make it a little easier for me to pass through and step into. And then the fifth level, the fifth layer of resistance that we bump into is the one that we're most common. You know, that area of secondary gain where we're worried that if we change this, we're going to lose something or we're going to gain a pain. You know, if I lose this emotion, then I'm no longer going to be safe. If I lose the weight, my skinny friends are going to make fun of me. And so the fifth and final level of resistance is what would go wrong? What would the penalty be? How would my life be worse if I change this issue? And then what we do is we deal with whatever is coming up. So as we work through those five layers, the protocol doesn't work. The protocol isn't going to work for me today. This is so ugly, it's going to hurt to go through. If I remove this, it's going to come back. If I lose this issue, it might bring me some relief, but it's also going to make my life worse. You know, that's going to prevent us from doing the work. So if we systematically go through all five of those, we're going to move forward. Now, I said I use this a lot. This doesn't mean that it comes up in every session. And when we resist, typically we're not resisting in all five of those areas. More than likely, it's just going to be one or two, but depending on what we're dealing with, it's going to change. And so by having this little checklist nearby, when we recognize that we're not doing the tapping we want to do, we can ask ourselves those five questions, okay? Is there a part of me that doesn't believe that EFT is going to work? Is there a part of me that doesn't believe EFT is going to work for me right now? Is there a part of me that's scared that the work we're going to do today is going to be painful? Is there a part of me that's afraid that I'm going to get relief and it's going to come back and that's going to stink? Is there a part of me that's worried that if I lose this, my life is going to get worse or it's going to get harder in some way? And we ask those questions, and it's possible we go bink, 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 bink through all five of them, and there's nothing to worry about. Or we're going to bump into something that is significant that we need to deal with. So resistance to change, one of the first things that I always spend time looking at when we're starting a session, paying attention to, and it's really good key skill. So do you have any questions about this idea of resistance and resistance to change and how we approach it? If you have a question and you are on, if you called in, you can simply press star 2. That's for folks who've called in and our Skype folks as well. For those of you over in the chat room, all you need to do is type a question into the box on the left and hit enter, and it will come through for me. It does not appear we have any questions about the first one. So we're going to move on to the second one. As we move through, we'll stop between each one. And if questions come up, please stop, raise your hand, send a note in the box. We'll get to it, even if it was about a previous one. So the second thing that I spend a great deal of time with clients and doing work is around the area of forgiveness. And early in January, one of the tools that I put up on the site was a short little tapping audio just around forgiveness. But I wanted to spend a little time kind of deconstructing it and breaking it apart, because I didn't spend a lot of time on that day, on that Monday when I shared the tool, talking about the idea behind it. And I think if you understand what's going on behind it, you'll see how it's really powerful. Forgiveness can be a really difficult thing because there are a lot of things that we think forgiveness is that forgiveness actually isn't. But because we think it's these things, it makes us hard to do. And that's a little abstract, so let me give you an example. It's possible for us to believe that if I forgive someone else, what I'm saying is, it's okay that they did it. You know, oh, it's not a big deal, I forgive you. But that's not what forgiveness is. So because we think forgiveness are a lot of things that have a negative consequence for us, we refuse to forgive. We refuse to forgive ourselves. We refuse to forgive other people. And in doing that, what we're doing is we're carrying this really heavy burden around that's preventing us from moving forward, that's spending a lot of negative energy towards something that isn't useful, that's holding us back. And in most cases, when we are struggling with forgiveness and we're struggling to forgive someone else, they're not even thinking about us. We might hold a grudge against someone else and they haven't given us or that instant a second thought because they've moved on. When I presented the tool, I presented it as just forgiving self, but it's important that we do it for other people. And so if you look through that tapping script, I think it was from the second week of January, or you play that audio, you're gonna see all of these things spelled out in the tapping script, but I think it's important to talk about them. You know? Forgiving someone is not saying we liked what happened. You know, I'm not saying it was a good outcome. Okay? We're not saying that we're happy it happened. We're not saying that they can do it again. Oftentimes we struggle with forgiving someone else or forgiving ourselves because we think, well, if I forgive them, I'm giving them permission to do it again. When we forgive, we oftentimes feel that we're saying they shouldn't be punished for what they've done. Like I said, ah, I forgive you, it's okay. That we think, it's not true, we think we're saying that there are no consequences. If we forgive, sometimes we believe we think we're giving them or someone else permission to do it to us again. So if I forgive you for doing it, then the person next to you can do it to me as well, and it's not that big of a deal. Sometimes when we forgive, we believe that what we're doing is we're saying we're part of the problem. Oh, I forgive you. I shouldn't have been there anyway. So if we forgive, we feel like we're having to take responsibility. We feel like we caused it from happening. Sometimes we believe that when we're forgiving, what we're saying is, you know, it's okay. You can do it again to someone else. You know, oh, I forgive you, which gives them permission. Even if they're not going to do it to us, they're going to go out and do it somewhere else. Sometimes we think forgiving means that we're going to forget, you know, oh, forgive and forget. And that's not the case. You know, if we forgive, and this is corollary to that, we feel like we're missing the lesson, that we're not learning from it. And none of those things are true. Forgiveness is not saying we like it. Forgiveness is not saying we're happy with it. Forgiveness is not saying they can do it again. Forgiveness is not saying they shouldn't be punished and have to live up to their responsibility. Forgiveness is not saying they can do it to someone else. Forgiveness is not saying we deserved it. Forgiveness is not saying we caused it. Forgiveness is not saying that they can do it again to someone else. Forgiveness is not saying that we're going to forget what happened. And forgiveness is not saying that we're not going to learn from the lesson. And I'm going to add all this stuff to the notes from the call so you can see all this stuff written out. So what is it then? What is forgiveness? Forgiveness is saying that we are choosing to no longer be emotionally tied to a circumstance in the past in a negative way. When I don't forgive you, I keep staying prisoner to that moment and I relive it again and again and again. And like I said, oftentimes the other person isn't thinking about it. The old cliche, you know, not forgiving someone is wishing ill on someone else and drinking the poison yourself. And for me, I found it really important that in order to be able to release and forgive, I need to be really intentional and I need to say all of these things out loud. That's the reason why we have that audio from back in January. And it was, if you want to go back and check it out, it was from January 14th. The tool was called Forgive Myself. That it's really important for me, at least, to repeatedly say out loud over and over again, you know, when I say I forgive someone, I'm not saying it's okay. I'm not saying they can do it again. And what that does is it opens us up to forgiveness. That a lot of times the burdens that we're carrying is because people have hurt us or we've done something that we're really embarrassed about. And because we're really embarrassed about it, we can't let it go. And we're choosing to imprison ourselves over and over again for all of eternity, which makes it really difficult to move forward. So I spend a lot of time with my clients and I spend a lot of time on my own tapping around this idea of forgiveness. It's a super, super powerful tool. So do you have any questions about this idea of forgiveness or questions about resistance? Again, feel free to just type questions in the box on the side, or if you're listening to us on the call, you can simply press star 2 to raise your hand. Great. And if you have questions about any of this stuff big picture-wise, when we're done, we'll come back to it at the end of the call. The third tool that I use a lot is something that I came upon really, really early on in my practice. And it's 8 little steps that I work through with almost any issue. And if you've ever worked with me one-on-one, you have experienced this. This is something that happens almost every single time I'm on the call with someone and almost every single time I bump into an issue. And what it is it's a way for us to effectively get information. And again, in the call notes when I post the audio, what I'm going to do is I'll list out these little steps for you so you can just get a little key reminder word to see what they're like. But the goal of this little process is to, one, help us to tune in more effectively, because that's the most important thing with tapping, is to efficiently and effectively tune into what we're dealing with. The second thing it does is it gives us an opportunity to get some clarity and a little disassociation to figure out what it is, because sometimes we're so far in the middle of something, it's really hard for us to understand. It also is a tool that helps us to move away from this state of conflict with our system. One of the phrases I came across really early on in my practice was this idea of turning our issues into our allies. And where this idea comes from is every single thing that we are experiencing, we're experiencing because our system thinks it's the best way in the short term to respond to the problem. Now, oftentimes, it's not an effective way to respond. It's not an effective way to respond in the long term, or it's misinformed and it's responding to a problem that isn't there. You know, smoking a cigarette might give you an excuse to leave your crazy coworkers for 7 minutes and go outside, and it gives you a chance to relax. So in the short term, it's being really, really helpful. Because I'm smoking cigarettes, I get to leave this space and I get to take a little bit of a break. You know, someone who's holding a lot of weight, they might be holding it because they're afraid how others might hurt them. And so the system has created this layer of insulation to keep them safe. Now, obviously, it's not really keeping people away, but that's the reason why the system is doing it. And it's really easy for us to be super frustrated with our system and super frustrated with our body and super frustrated with our response. And if you are in a circumstance where you are battling or you are fighting your system, it's going to be really hard to heal and transform. So the system, this little tool I'm going to teach you, is set up so we move away from being in conflict with our system and move to the place of being an ally with our system. Because then when we get it to work and transform, we can unpack it in a way that we're working together, because it's working towards our betterment, even if it's working in the wrong way. Finally, like I said, it disassociates it, so it allows us to step through it in a natural, easy way to get information we might not have. So the steps go like this. So the first thing that we do is we tune into an experience of whatever it is. So it might be a memory of having a conflict with someone at work, or it might be a physical sensation where I tune into the weight in my body. So step one, simply tune into what it is and where it is. Step two is to recognize the emotion or emotions that go along with it. Is it frustration? Is it overwhelm? Is it scared? Is it anxious? Whatever it is, find the emotion. Tune into the emotion. So we think of the experience, we think of the emotion, and again, this isn't too radical. The third thing that we do is we tune into where it lands in the body. Now, it might not necessarily land in the body. It might, and I'll give you an example of that in a moment. But almost always, when we're having some sort of emotional experience, there is a visceral component that goes along with it. Is it butterflies in the stomach? Is it a tightness in the throat? Is it tears behind the eyes? Is it a heaviness on the shoulder? Is it a wall in front of us? Fog in the brain, whatever it is. Now, like I said, sometimes what it might actually be is just a critical naggy voice in our head. And if that's the case, we're going to do the process the exact same way and we're going to tune into it. But what we want to do is we want to find out and isolate how we're experiencing it. Now, it's possible we might experience it in multiple places. It's tension in my forehead and tightness in my throat and butterflies in my stomach. If this happens, I'm going to ask myself, where is the epicenter? And I'm going to trust my instinct. And let's say it's my throat. So I'm going to work primarily with my throat the first time through. And I might come back to see what else is there. So, memory or experience, emotion, where it's located in the body. Step four, and this is the hardest part sometimes, thank the issue for being there. Again, we're working from this premise that all of these things exist to be helpful. Now, we're not thanking it for the tactic it's using. We're not thanking it for the outcome that we're getting from it. We're simply thanking it for the fact that it's trying so hard to keep me safe. Example, I'm about to give a presentation at work and I'm really, really nervous. Tapping on it where I'm giving thanks might look something like this. Right now, I'm really nervous, and this part of me that's really nervous is just trying to keep me safe. When I get nervous, it's pointing out that there's danger around, and there's a part of me that thinks speaking in front of my coworkers is a really dangerous thing. Even though it's not actually dangerous, I appreciate the fact that part of my system is looking out for me and trying to keep me safe. 9 times out of 10, if you do that, you're going to feel this huge release of whatever the issue is receding just a little bit. Because what's happening is it's no longer fighting. Because up until this point, we've been frustrated that we're nervous or scared or overweight or smoking or whatever it is. And now what we've done is we've said to the system, it's okay. It's not a big deal. I know you're trying to be helpful. Let's work together. And so there's this release and let go. So any questions about the first four steps before we kind of dive into the more complicated part of it? Okay, great. There's a question about forgiveness. We are going to come back to that. Don't worry about it. I want to finish this here and we'll come back there. The fifth thing that we do is, once we have identified it And once we have tuned into it, what we want to do is we want to know what it's so worried about, or what it needs to be safe, or what does it perceive as the problem. So once we've thanked it, we turn to it again and we simply say, I appreciate the fact that you're here. So what do you think is really going to go wrong? What do you perceive as the danger out there? I'm going to speak in front of everybody and they're going to laugh at me. If I don't get out of this office to get some fresh air, I'm going to go crazy and smack someone at work. So we ask it, what is the problem? What is the struggle? What is there? Once we get that information, the sixth step is we ask it, what proof do you have that this is the case? Why do you actually believe that if this continues, the bad outcome's going to happen? Why do you believe if you speak at work, they're going to laugh at you? Why do you believe if you're successful, you're going to fail? Why do you believe if you put yourself out there, everybody's going to mock you? And all of a sudden, this proof is going to show up. And oftentimes, it's what we call the initial sensitizing event. And the initial sensitizing event is the first time we experience something that created this negative belief. And oftentimes, when we collapse that initial sensitizing event, we collapse the entire issue. So now, we have something really specific to tap on. So if it's a piece of information, if it's a memory, if it's a belief, we go after that and we tap with that. The last step is the transformation. Now that we understand what's there, we ask it, what does it need? Do you need information? Do you need a resource? Do you need safety? And what we do is as we tap, we bring that into the space. You know, I feel like I'm really scared up there. Okay, well, what would make you feel better? You know, the sense of feeling confident that I know what I'm saying. So then we'd spend some time reminding the system, you've worked really hard in this presentation. You know exactly what's coming. And by doing that, what it's going to do, it's going to move you to a place where you're going to be able to find your way to a little more relief. So experience, 2, emotion, 3, where does it land? 4, thank it. 5, ask it what it's worried about. What's the danger? 6, what proof does it have that that's the case? 7, bring it information and resources so it can manage the trouble. And now step 8, go back to the beginning and just do it again recursively. Reimagine yourself in that circumstance. Reimagine yourself in that situation. Think of a situation that's similar to it. And what it will do is it might land somewhere else in the body. Instead of being in the stomach, it's now in the throat. Or instead of being knots in the stomach, it's now butterflies. And we just repeat the process. And so if you work through those 8 steps, what you're going to do is you're going to put yourself into a position and a place where you're going to quickly be able to move through things. And this is the best part about it. We are relying on the system to give us the information. There are many, many clients who think I've done an absolutely fabulous job of accurately dissecting their issue and helping them see what the root is. And the way I've done that is I've simply asked them to ask their system a bunch of questions. And because they've gotten out of their own head, they've allowed themselves to bring forward information where they're able to unpack it on their own. And this isn't something that only needs to be led through by a practitioner. That these 8 steps you can actually work through on your own. And again, if you just have the little notes there, you can work your way through them. So, any questions about that little 8-step process that allow you to do that? I got a number of questions that we will go into here. Okay. First question that showed up, and this is from the previous step, and this is a really good question. What happens if you are tapping to forgive and you find yourself getting angry all over again? What happens then? Well, what that means is we might not be to the place where we're ready to get to forgiveness. We might be in a place where when anger shows up, we're still being attacked or we still are perceiving attack, and that's why we're getting angry. And I think one of the mistakes that novice practitioners make is they move to forgiveness too quickly, And so as you find yourself stepping into doing some forgiveness work, and all of a sudden the emotions show up really, really strong, that's okay, wait. We're not ready to forgive yet. We still need to do some processing about the fact whether or not we're safe yet. And so if you find yourself getting really, really angry, more than likely it means that the system is in a place where it still perceives the danger. And if we still perceive the danger, it's not safe for us to forgive. Now, we might be completely out of danger. That thing happened 15 years ago. I'm never seeing that person again. But part of the system's still on guard because it still thinks it's there. And so if we don't respond to that first. So if while doing forgiveness, really strong visceral emotions show up about the instance that we're trying to forgive for, that's a really good sign that we're not done healing our way through it to get to the point of tapping. Take a step back. Do another one of the approaches before we get to that forgiveness place. So, Elizabeth, let me know if that helps you on that, or if there needs some clarification on that. And just, again, type question in. Another question. For me, the sensation is almost always tension in my stomach for all sorts of different issues. I wonder why it is the same between emotions as defeat, anger, sadness. I also wonder if it's just sort of a baseline sensation that always comes forth, then overrides my body's sense of what I'm tuning into. So question is, it keeps landing in the same place for me over and over again. Is that a bad thing? Is there something there that I need to know? Now, part of it could be that the first layer of the emotion, no matter what's going on, is a worry and an anxiety. And the worry and the anxiety is going to land in the stomach. And the worry and anxiety might be about me not being safe. The worry and anxiety might be about not wanting to actually do the work. I'm thinking about it, and that's scary. And so I'm worried about what the tapping might look like we talked about earlier in the resistance. And so the first layer of it might be in a place where it's landing there first. And as you gather information, you're going to find the information the system gives you to what's it worried about or what does it see as dangerous is going to be different every single time. It's just coming from that same symptom. So that might be the place. Another way of looking at it is the system might have discovered that the best way to get our attention is to have tension in the stomach. For whatever reason, it knows that that works every time. And so it's almost like a car alarm. The car alarm goes off exactly the same, regardless if someone's bumping into it, someone's breaking the window, someone's hit it from behind. It's the only way it knows to respond, or it's the way it knows is going to get our attention. And so I would be less concerned about the fact that the symptom physically is landing in the same place. The time I would start to wonder about that is when I tune into that stomach and I affirm it and I go through the steps and I start asking questions. If it's not coming forward with useful information, then I'm going to be in a circumstance where I'm going to want to start to question that. So let me know if that answer is helpful. Okay. I understand the importance of finding the initial desensitizing events. I often feel pressure when tapping to find them, and it presents itself as a challenge to me. Okay, yes, this is really great. And this is something where I might have led you a little bit astray, and this is important to recognize. Sometimes when we ask what proof it has, it's going to give us an initial sensitizing event. Sometimes it's not. And that's okay. It is possible for us to heal, and it is possible for us to move forward without knowing why. Now, there is going to be a part of our system that struggles to heal because it wants to know why, because it believes that if I know why I am the way that I am, I can prevent it from happening again in the future. And so it's almost as if the system is going to keep the leaks coming through the pipes until it can find the cause of why the pipes got broken in the first place, because it believes if I can figure that out, then the pipes are never going to be leaky again. Now, this is good and useful information, but there are things that cause us trouble that don't have an initial sensitizing event. You know, body image issues, for example. And that's not just for women, it's for everyone. You know, we're seeing a huge spike in men having issues with it as well. Most people who have body image issues, they weren't 13 in a swimsuit and everybody in class pointed at them and laughed. Instead, they have spent a lifetime being bombarded with images of what a perfect body looks like. And when looking in the mirror, we don't look like that. And in that comparison, start to recognize what's happening in our experience is bad. And since that's the case, there's not an initial sensitizing event. And so when I am doing healing work and I'm working with a client or I'm working with myself and I find myself stuck and frustrated that I'm not moving forward, and this is another type of resistance because I need to know why, what I tap on is, it's possible for me to have release. It's possible for me to let go without having to know why about every single issue. There are issues in which I'm working on in which there is no why. And as time passes, I'm going to move myself to a place where I'm healthy and there's well-being and it won't matter why. And so in doing that, I'm going to give myself some space and I'm going to allow the healing to unfold without having to know why. So as we go through it, we might find our way to initial sensitizing events, but it's not always going to be the case. And it isn't always necessary. Let's see here. So I can be really thankful because it's always there and noticeable for me. So this is back to the question about, you know, it's always landing in the stomach. So I can be thankful because it's always giving me a signal. That's exactly right. Just because something's coming forward and it's coming forward in the same place and we're recognizing it and we're using it as an entry, that's a victory. It might not be a different place with every issue that gives us this really beautiful, elegant solution, but the simple fact that the system's communicating with us as we move forward is a good, powerful, useful thing. Let's see here again. If you want to raise your hand, just press star 2. No other questions in the incoming box. Great. Okay. So number 4, we talked about this a little bit in the area of resistance to change. What would go wrong if we let go of something or if something is transformed? And I certainly find myself an inordinate amount of time with clients talking about that. And oftentimes those things are really, really surprising. And so I wanted to spend a little time outside of the sense of resistance looking at that question in a really specific, straightforward way. And so there are lots of ways for us to do this. And for me, one of the most effective ways is to imagine the transformation happening, to imagine my life in a different way, kind of like we did in the hero tapping in the 3 different ways a few weeks ago as well. And really looking at the way that my system and my memory and my experience reacts to this thing changing. You know, what would be, and just asking ourselves directly, what would be the worst thing that would happen? What could possibly go wrong? How is this so dangerous for this to change? If I got everything that I wanted, what is the worst possible outcome that could show up? If I got everything that I wanted, what is the most painful part about getting all of that? If I got everything I wanted, how would that hurt the people around me? And oftentimes, our ability to move forward is the fact that we get stuck inside of that. The other part of this that gets complicated is the next piece, is this idea of oftentimes the penalty that we get for letting go of this is the fact that we feel like we're letting go of the people who gave us the belief. You know, I could have, because of an experience with a loved one, I could have the belief that rich people are just mean, nasty, horrible, awful, awful people. And I've come to recognize, because of that belief, it's hard for me to make lots of money or to be successful because I'm afraid that everyone around me is going to think I'm a mean, horrible, nasty, nasty person. And the reason I believe that is because the household I grew up in, they used to curse and scream about the rich, nasty people. And so if I recognize the fact that I've been given this belief by one of my parents, and I decide that I want to let this go, there's a part of me that believes that when I let this go, I'm also letting go of my loved one. And this is something that people get hung up a lot, you know, because these primary relationships of people who love us, who have given us so much, are being put in a position where we're feeling like we're letting go of them and we're questioning them. And so for me, it's a really powerful thing when I recognize where I've been given a limited belief to tap in this way. It's possible for me to let go of this belief and still love the person who gave it to me. It's possible for me to let go of this belief and still trust the person who gave it to me. It's possible for me to let go of this belief and support the person who gave it to me. It's possible for me to let go of this belief and still be connected to the person who gave it to me. They gave me the belief because they thought it was helpful. They gave me the belief because it was the best they could do. That belief might have been helpful for me at one point. It's no longer helpful for me today. And it's okay if I let the belief go, knowing full well I'm not letting go of the person who gave it to me. Because there's this real hang-up and this real connection between the way that we see ourselves and our beliefs in relationship to the people who gave them to us. And if I feel like I'm letting go of my mother because I'm letting go of the worldview that she gave me, it's going to be really hard for me to let go of that, even if I have a strained relationship with my mother. Please note, I have a wonderful relationship with my mother. This is just a hypothetical. But what it does is, because we're so entangled and entwined in these people who are our primary relationships who gave us so much, it's hard to let it go. And so it's really important that we point to that. And so I find myself almost regularly, you know, almost every session when we're dealing with a belief, finding it hard to let go of the belief because someone valuable gave it to us. And so when we're able to tune into that belief and recognize the fact that we can let go of the belief without letting go of the person, it's going to put us in a place that allows us to move forward in a healthy way. So any questions about that, about being able to let go and release a belief without having to let go and release somebody who loves us? So you can press star 2 to raise your hand, or you can type a question in. Does not appear to be any questions. Great. The last one is a tool we talked about a little bit in the call and the question and answer call, and there's a really extensive audio about it on the website, on the regular website, tappingqna.com, and that's about to and as if. And so I didn't want to take a great deal of time diving into that one tonight because I've talked about that a number of times before. If you do have questions about that, we can answer those. And I'll also put in the show notes, when I put the audio up for you guys to download later tonight, a link directly to that. So questions about any of those, you know, as we step forward, recognizing the resistance to change, working on this idea of forgiveness, the really easy process of turning our issues into our allies, recognizing that when loved ones give us beliefs, it's possible for us to let go of those beliefs without letting go of the loved ones, and the tool about to and as if. Those are the five that I find myself using for huge amounts of the work that I do with my clients. It's not that the other things aren't effective, but these really, really do the heavy lifting in my personal tapping, and they do the heavy lifting in my practice. And, you know, we have a few moments here. If you have questions about anything else tapping related, please feel free to either raise your hand by pressing star 2 or by typing your questions here into the box. And there does not appear to be any hands being raised. And I'll give you a few more seconds tapping, typing in case you're typing slower than you'd like or feeling pressured to get it in. As a reminder, every single one of these calls that we do after the call, I update the information for the call-in with the audio, and within 24 hours, what I will do is I will add the show notes as well, a lot of things that we talked about tonight, so you can kind of dissect them out. Does not appear that we have any more questions for this evening. As a reminder, on February 26th at 7 p.m. Eastern time, we're going to have another question and answer tapping call. So please show up with any of your tapping questions or any of your tapping issues. If there's something that you would like to tap on and try out, just to see how we might approach that, we'll be able to do those where you'll be able to enter your questions in or you'll be able to raise your hand on the call. One final call for questions, no raised hands. No more questions in the chat box. So with that, I wish you a great evening. As always, if you have any questions, please just email me directly at gene@tappingqna.com. Keep tapping, keep tuning into your goal list, keep being easy with yourself in this process. And if you don't know what to do, just go to the site, go to the tap along section, find one of those tap alongs that you know will be useful for you, hit play, and tap to it. As always, let me know what I can do to be useful. Have a great evening, and I'll talk to you real soon. Bye-bye.